All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode... I'm not even certain which episode right now. alongside me, I'm with the man that some call the... A little bit too optimistic about world championship predictions. It's not over yet. Christopher Roach. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Robin. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. You could hear Chris laughing in the background because we're in the same place using the same microphone. And his son here is here as well. Well, hey, say hi.
Hi.
Hi. And he even waved his hands.
And we're actually at a racetrack, aren't we, Robin?
That's right. We are at Circuit of the Americas. We just finished watching Free Practice 3. And this is not the actual and official... Lamborghini, Mercedes, AMG GT going by us slowly compared to the F1 cars. This is not the actual intro, but we just wanted to quickly say hello and prove that we were actually at the race together.
We do go to motor racing occasionally.
It does happen.
And it is pretty awesome, so you should try it if you don't.
And I do feel a bit more authentically like a racing fan because I'm next to a Brit. While I'm watching,
it's a good mixture of nationalities here. Though we got a lot of Mexicans, a lot of Ferrari fans.
Yep, exactly.
We've got some Dutch around us. It's I see an Aussie flag over there. It's a good vibe here in Austin.
And there's some young chap named Lewis running around that Will likes. Maybe they're friends. The actual show is coming up. I hope you enjoy it. But this is a little, what would you call this? A tasty teaser.
An intro. Yep.
Yeah. There you go. All right.
An hors d'oeuvre.
We'll say hello again in a moment.
Hi.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 258. See, I know the number now, of the Fun with Cars Formula One podcast. I'm Robin Warner, and I am joined by the man some call too chuffed to stand, Christopher Roche. Hey, Chris.
Hello, Robin. How you doing?
I'm doing well, but it's not as well as you are, clearly, but we'll get to that in a second. Today, we're going to talk about the Mexican and U.S. Grand Prix, which were the 17th and 18th rounds of the Formula One Championship. It is quite the pair of rounds to talk about, I think. It is Wednesday evening, November 13th, and here are the results of the Grand Prix in Mexico. It was Lewis Hamilton that won the race in the leading Mercedes. He was followed by Sebastian Vettel in the lead Ferrari in second. Valtteri Bottas was in the second Mercedes in third, and Charles Leclerc was in the second Ferrari in fourth. Followed by a pair of Red Bull Racing Hondas, Alex Albon leading Max Verstappen. Sergio Perez was in the lead Racing Point Mercedes in seventh. Daniel Ricciardo was in the lead Renault in eighth. Pierre Gasly was in the lead Scuderia Toro Rosso Honda in ninth. And Nico Hülkenberg was in the second Renault in tenth. Daniel Kvyat was in the second Scuderia Toro Rosso Honda in 11th. Lance Stroll in the second Racing Point Mercedes in 12th. 13th place went to this with first. Yes, first. Oh, wait. Yeah, first. McLaren of Carlos Sainz, 13th. 14th place went to Antonio Giovinazzi in the lead Alfa Romeo Racing Ferrari. And 15th place, the lead Haas, Kevin Magnussen. 16th place, the lead Williams of George Russell. 17th place, the second Haas Ferrari of Romain Grosjean. 18th place, the second Williams of Robert Kubica. And then two folks were not classified. That was Kimi Raikkonen in the second Alfa Romeo Racing Ferrari and Lando Norris in the McLaren Renault. In the United States, which Chris and I saw firsthand, it was Valtteri Bottas that won the race in the lead Mercedes. He was followed by Lewis Hamilton in the second Mercedes. Max Verstappen was third in the Red Bull Racing Honda. Fourth place went to Charles Leclerc in the lead Ferrari, and the only Ferrari effectively after a few laps. Alexander Albon was fifth in the second Red Bull Racing Honda. Sixth place went to Daniel Ricciardo in the Renault. Seventh and eighth place were both McLarens. Lando Norris leading Carlos Sainz. Ninth place went to Nico Hülkenberg in the Renault, in the second Renault. Tenth place went to Sergio Perez in the leading Racing Point Mercedes. 11th place, Kimi Raikkonen in the Alfa Romeo Racing Ferrari. 12th place, Daniel Kvyat in the lead Scuderia Toro Rosso Honda. 13th place, Lance Stroll in the second Racing Point Mercedes. 14th place, Antonio Giovinazzi in the Alfa Romeo Racing Ferrari, the second one. 15th place, Romain Grosjean in the Haas Ferrari, the lead Haas Ferrari. 16th place, Pierre Gasly in the second Scuderia Toro Rosso Honda. 17th place, George Russell in the lead, Williams Mercedes. 18th place, Kevin Magnussen in the second, Haas Ferrari. And two folks not classified, Robert Kubica in the second, Williams Mercedes, and Sebastian Vettel in the second, Ferrari. Okay. I already know what you're going to say, so Chris, go ahead and say it.
Great that Alex Albon's got the drive for next season.
I knew you'd try to throw in a zinger of some kind, and that's funny because that was on my list of news items to talk about as well. I genuinely agree with you that in the United States, he really earned his place, and I'm very happy that he gets it. I think it turned a corner for me when I listened to his episode of the Beyond the Grid podcast. He's got a really interesting story, and I really appreciate his enthusiasm for the sport. So I'm quite happy for him.
I mean, I think he deserves it, though. I mean, on based on the drives he's had this season, both for STR and also Red Bull, he's taken the opportunity, and he's really delivered in the Red Bull. I mean, it's not been without incident, but he's outscored Max in the races they've driven his teammates, and he is solidly delivering the results, which I said Gasly was not, which is qualify in the top six and you finish in the top six. And that's what he's been doing, even when he's been, hit by Carlos Sainz and put to the back of the field, he still gets back to where that car deserves. So, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how he goes next year.
Doesn't that mean you owe me another bottle of gin? I'm pretty sure, wasn't that the rules that... Guys, you already owe me a bottle of gin, so I think this is just like a tax on that. You owe me a second one.
Well, I think you owe me the bottle of gin, and if you want to give me two, that's really up to you.
Well, I mean, for a whole list of circumstances, I might actually do that. Okay, so that is the big news coming out of the United States and Mexican Grand Prix. That's correct. Is there anything else you want to touch on?
Well, in the course of those two races, the championships were decided. Mercedes-Benz lifted the crown again. And a reasonably well-known racing driver by the name of Lewis, I think, also became a six-time world champion.
Yes, and I do believe that you had a Union Jack flag with, I do believe it was masking tape.
No, he's been spelling.
Spelling out that Lewis, in fact, would be the sixth, his sixth Drivers' World Championship, or World Drivers' Championship, excuse me. And he did, in fact, achieve that. I did a little bit of statistics, and he had out of 330 possible chances of the way the points would fall, in 322 of them, Lewis would, in fact, take the crown.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't the easiest weekend for him. He had a tricky qualifying, and Valtteri was doing everything he could to try and keep the championship alive.
Well, I mean, he did do the only thing he could do, which was win the race. That was his only option. He had to win the race.
Yeah, and he did that. I mean, he had some struggles in the prior race in Mexico where he crashed in qualifying, which put him on the back foot and gave the initiative to Lewis. But in the US, he was flawless, no doubt. Very, very good performance.
So in Lewis winning his sixth championship here in 2019, it did remind me of all the ways that Nico Rosberg was the superior driver at Mercedes, how Lewis Hamilton could not overcome all of Nico's strengths in 2016. So I thought this would be a good opportunity to go over, maybe the top five things of the ways that Nico Rosberg is better than Lewis Hamilton as a race car driver.
Okay, let's go.
All right. So, number one, clearly he's a much better qualifier. That was no questions asked, because he was on pole lots of times.
So has he got more or less than 87
and
pole positions?
Lewis Hamilton was only on the pole some of the time.
When I look at all-time qualifying greats, right, is Nico, where's he going to be? Top 10? Is he even make it in the top 10?
Yeah, he's going to be number one. I thought that part was obvious. It's not the number, number one in the polls. It's the quality. It's the quality of the polls, Chris. And his polls were always top notch. Were they?
I don't recall that, but yeah. I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. Okay, number two. He was clearly he had much better racecraft. Like the times when he was racing and he would pass people. I mean, that was really.
I don't recall any of those offhand. Can you remember any?
Okay, number three. Obviously, car setup. He was much better at that. Uh-huh. I think he did most of that work himself.
Except for Mrs. Rosberg.
You know, Mercedes had to spend a lot of money when Rosberg left the team to get a bunch of engineers and stuff to fill the roles for Valtteri Bottas, because mm-hmm. Bottas is just a driver, just like Lewis. Uh-huh. Number four, he's much better at PR. He sold himself very well. Lewis never sold himself well. And
he doesn't have a global identity, does he? No, you're right.
Exactly. That's right. And
any more of these?
Yeah. Well, there's several more. I've been taking the whole stage. You should have one. What's one of the things where clearly you could see that?
I think you're right. In the ranking of Nico, Formula One drivers called Nico, he's leading that one. And in the Rosberg family, it's one all. So he's not actually leading in his own family. But, you know, and I still, my biggest issue with Nico was always that he just wasn't as cool as his dad, who was an absolute legend. And Nico turns up and you're not quite sure what he is. So I've always had a problem with him from the beginning, to be honest.
His dad was Finnish and Nico was German. I feel like that explains it very well.
And then I remember particularly being irate when Williams gave him a decent car. This was pre-Mercedes, obviously. And he was in a position at the Singapore Grand Prix to, I think, get a podium. And he couldn't keep it on the track. He exited the pits, crossed the white line, got a penalty, and therefore dropped the position. And it never, in my mind, could recover from that. That was such a basic error. But, you know, what he was very good at doing was fettling Lewis's car so it would blow up or fail to finish or have some errant problem. He was very accomplished at that.
That's what I was looking for. That's what I was missing. Yeah, and first of all, let me say, I know a lot of very cool, calm, and collected Germans, and I love Germany. I don't want – there is no ill will towards Germany, first of all. Second of all let's take a step back, and then we'll talk about the two Grand Prix just a little bit. But take a step back and think about that. What Lewis has achieved is really, really something, because not only has he up to six titles, he's still in a strong position that he'll obviously be competing for a seventh next year, which would tie the all-time record. He's got, by less count, I think 83 wins, which puts him within 8 wins of tying Michael Schumacher's win count. And obviously a ninth one would surpass. He's already overcome Schumacher when it comes to pole positions. And Schumacher, effectively speaking, achieved these records at the end of 2006. So not only is he coming and mounting a real charge against these seemingly unbeatable records, he's doing so in not that long of a time when Schumacher set them in the first place. Discounting the time that Schumacher was a Mercedes driver, 10, 11, 12, the two of them just missed each other. Hamilton's rookie season was the first season of Schumacher's retirement. And now we're in this phase where Hamilton's career is obviously pretty deep and matured. And I'm just kind of blown away at how big a bar Michael set and how quickly Lewis has been able to approach it.
Yeah, I don't think anyone really thought it was possible to get near Michael's record when he finally retired.
Obviously, he was stint at Mercedes. He didn't add to those records, but he was still, you know, 7 championships, over 90 wins. I don't think, you know, it's such an extraordinary achievement by him. And he, you know, he put a big gap between him and the likes of Fangio and Prost and Stewart and company. And, yeah, it just looked insurmountable. And for a long time, that looked the case for Lewis, really, because he was struggling after the McLaren era and didn't look like he was going to add to his championships for a while until this extraordinary run by Mercedes has started. And yeah, he's knocking on the door. I mean, I don't think... I do feel it's a shame that his achievement of being a 6-time world champion is being overshadowed by everyone looking ahead to next year to see if he can equal Schumacher. I think you've got to really celebrate this title, and there's going to be a lot of stiff competition next season, no doubt. And you know, he should just be, you know, he's already achieved a great deal, and he should reflect on this before worrying too much about next year, I think.
Well, I think, to be fair, that he's going to enjoy this plenty, and also that he was reflecting on those bigger records long before this title anyway. That would be, I mean, to be totally honest, that would be my guess. I think that there are some neat things about this. You know, if he were to never win another championship, just randomly, for instance, he would stand alone as a 6-time champion, and he wouldn't be sharing that title with anybody. That's a neat little something. Yeah. Really, if he wants to get there again, he has to win 2 more championships. So he's still got a lot ahead of him. I think really almost more impressive to me in a lot of ways, because it is hard to completely separate his winning streak and championship streak with Mercedes winning and championship streak. Because, you know, since 2014, Mercedes is now 6-for-6. And that's driver and constructor titles. That's remarkable. And I believe that is an absolute record right there. That had been longstanding but Ferrari had achieved that right around the turn of the century, and Mercedes has since surpassed that. But the fact that Hamilton has won so often and overcome so often and gone through different competition from Ferrari, from his teammates and all these things, and continues to have an edge, and doing so without having any clear number one status, and in fact not wanting it. He clearly has favor with the team, but he works hard to not give himself clear number one status, and yet he still has achieved what he's achieved. So I really think, to me, that's where the praise is due more than anywhere else.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I mean, a lot of people point to the fact that he's had the dominant car for those 6 years, and that's absolutely true. But, you know, one of the stats I like most about Lewis is the fact he's won in every season he's raced in Formula One. And there's very few drivers that can say that. And he's had some, you know, obviously he started with McLaren. Not everyone has that opportunity, but McLaren gave him a couple of dodgy cars while he was driving for them. And yet he still managed to win races with those cars. And, you know, the language coming out of his team and himself is that, you know, the fires aren't diminishing. I think, you know, the rise of some of the young talent like Max and Charles is only making him want to extend his time in Formula One, certainly not think about retiring. I think he's relishing the opportunity to take these guys on in more equal equipment, because certainly the Ferrari has been strong in the second half of this year, and Red Bull's been pretty good with Honda power this season. And, you know, there's been some good battles, and I think he's enjoyed and relished those battles. And the fact that Mercedes have still managed to, you know, come through that dip in form after the summer break and win a couple of races in a row, despite not necessarily having the fastest car, I think only just, you know, fuels the fire for the fight for next season. So it's been a remarkably consistent season by Lewis this year. He started much, much better. He really put the championship to bed far earlier than he has in previous seasons.
yeah, it's been an incredible performance. I mean, Valtteri has raised his level this year and still hasn't really come close to threatening Lewis on a consistent basis.
Well, yeah. Now let's talk about, you mentioned securing the championship. I think that that's true. And one thing we should note is that while Lewis secured the championship in the United States Grand Prix, you and I saw it live. We should talk about the races a little bit before we get too far, but I want to get this point out. Either Lewis or Valtteri Bottas was going to win the championship, and that's been true for a little while. And I'm struggling. I think that was also technically secured in Mexico and effectively secured before that, that it was going to be Lewis or Valtteri Bottas, no matter what. So the only fight he had was with his teammate, and he had a huge advantage over his teammate. This was, even though technically secured in the U.S., this was a lot of the stress of the championship had gone a couple of Grand Prix before.
I mean, they dominated the first, 10 Grand Prix, so it was always between those two, wasn't it? And, you know, they've had a couple of interlopers. It's interesting, Valtteri's got more pole positions than Lewis this year, which is a surprising anomaly. Lewis leads the head-to-head, but to have been out-qualified by, you know, in terms of pole positions is quite unusual. I think Nico, your buddy Nico, did it one year, right? But
yeah,
but not.
It was either 14 or 15.
But yeah, not
that he had more poles.
Yeah, not too many drivers have managed that over the years. So
I still think that Lewis Hamilton's most formidable teammate was Jenson Button.
Wow!
In the McLaren,
all those Alonso fans out there, all of those hardcore guys, will not like you for that comment.
I can live. So,
but I agree with you. I think everyone thought Button was going to be eaten alive going into McLaren, and he outperformed everyone's expectations and was very consistent and out-pointed Lewis in one of their seasons, right? School.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think the two, because of the condition of the McLaren at the time, and because of Hamilton's style versus Jensen's style, Jensen is very much a thinker. He thinks his way through the cars. Jensen is very good at getting a car right. And when he gets the car just right, he's epically fast. But he's quite sensitive. If the car's not just right, he slows way down. Whereas Hamilton can work around a car that doesn't quite suit him. And I think because of Jensen's strength of setting up a car and being sensitive to the car's feeling, and the condition of the McLaren at the time really helped him match and even surpass Hamilton in a lot of occasions. But we're going way back.
But that's a great segue to what Sebastian Vettel said after the Mexican Grand Prix, where...
Ah, yes, I love segues.
Lewis... just to remind everyone, managed to win the race with only a one stop and had to, I forget how many laps he had to run on his second set of tyres, but it was quite numerous. And I think Sebastian, and I don't remember it word for word, so I'll paraphrase it, was that Lewis Hamilton's girlfriend is very lucky if he treats her half as well as he treats his tires or something like that, the way he massages his tires.
I remember that, yes. Yes, I do remember that, yes. That was very good.
There was a bit of a love fest going on between Seb and Lewis, which is a little curious, because I remember when Seb was winning all his titles, Hamilton and Alonso used to go on about how they were better than he was, and if they were in the Red Bull, they'd be winning too. And so there was always a lot of sour grapes back in those days, but they appear to have buried the hatchet and have some mutual admiration these days.
Well, I don't think it's a mystery. I don't think it's a mystery at all. I think I know exactly why. And the reason is that Sebastian Vettel is so much happier racing Hamilton than he is racing Leclerc. And so whenever he's ahead of Leclerc and on the podium with Hamilton, he feels like, yes, this is appropriate. And when and because the alternative seems to be that his teammates outperforming him, he's just happy as a clam that he's racing Hamilton and Verstappen and not his own teammate. That's my
he's
theory.
He's also quite happy when he's got four wheels on his car, right? And all.
Ah, yes. So is there any – before we get there, is there anything about the Mexican Grand Prix that stood out? I was, as you were, impressed how Hamilton managed to pull off the one stopper. And I thought it was a cool race in general, but nothing – I mean, it seemed like Max Verstappen got a pretty raw deal with that. I mean, they claimed it was a racing incident. And I think that's fair, but, you know, it's still, you know, Verstappen started towards the front. He got knocked down to the back and then had to limp his way up and ended up doing well, just, you know, end up sixth on the lead racing lap.
Well, no, I mean, I thought Max had a really bad weekend. So he had a car capable of winning. He had a car capable of being on pole position and found a way to throw it away. I mean, it was a very curious incident. So we've got... He's already set one lap in qualifying that was good enough for pole position, right? So we got the second run in Q3. He's behind...
Oh, that's right. The qualifying is... Yeah. Yes, I forgot
so
about
he's,
that.
He and Lewis are both behind Bottas on their last Q3 runs. Bottas throws it into the wall on the last turn. So the yellow flags fly. Lewis lifted, I believe, and Max did not. And he set the quickest time. But both his times were quicker than anyone else had set. So, you know, he then got asked in the post-qualifying press conference, did you lift for the yellow? Did you see the yellow? And he said, no. But, you know, if it's a big deal, they can delete the time, because he knew that he'd set another time quick enough for pole. But the way the rules work are that they don't delete the time. They just give you a three-place grid penalty. So he lost pole position.
That's right. And he yes, was fuming yes, about yes.
It. And I, you know, and he only had himself to blame. And the way he handled the questions in the press conference weren't very good. He was very petulant even then. And then, of course, in the race, he had a good tussle with Lewis through turn one and two, and which ended up damaging Lewis's car and I think his car. He had further troubles. But I mean, he finished a solid sixth. But that is not what he wanted. He wanted a race win. And I think we haven't seen that side of him much this year. He's been much more level-headed, much more consistent. But the toys came out of the pram again in Mexico, and he let himself down, I thought. And that was the big talking point from that race, other than, of course, Ferrari finding a way to lose again. Because once Max got his penalty, they locked out the front row. And it was only through incompetent pit stop strategy that they failed to win, really.
Yeah, Ferrari's just been making it's been hard to understand the mistakes they've been making, to be honest.
So. Yeah, I mean, they just seem to keep finding a way to not maximize it at their weekends. You know, whether it's driver error, team error, strategy error, whatever the case may be. I mean, US was a real low point for them this year. I mean, that was a horror show for anyone. Any of the Tifosi that happened to be in Austin, because, I mean, it was just one disaster after another, quite frankly.
Well, let's talk about that. So you and I were there. We saw it live. And it was great. Your son had a good time?
Oh, yeah. He actually wouldn't stop thanking me for several days after.
Oh, that's so great. Well, that is so great that he showed appreciation like that.
He's still got his wristband on. He won't take it off. And he's already booked us in for next year in his mind. He wants to go back. So
that's hilarious. Well, I gave Harrison my wristbands, and he's played with them. He's not worn them and not taken them off though. But Harrison's not quite old enough to be there yet, right? Yeah. So, and where did you guys end up watching the race?
I guess you could say it's the exit of turn two into the Beckett's inspired series of turns. So.
Okay, so you were right into the beginning of like the S's
exactly.
That make up sector one and make it a quite fast sector.
Yeah, we were
so that
just
means
up the track from where we bumped into each other on Saturday. So we tried that
yeah,
whole
yeah,
area.
Yeah, okay.
We quite like that spot because you got them you got them sweeping past you. You could see them all the way through the S's. There was a screen right there. And then you could also see them in coming on the opposite side of the track, underneath the vantage tower, whatever that tower is called, the viewing deck.
Yeah, the tall, the 250-foot tall tower.
So it's pretty cool, actually. Not bad spot.
So that means that you probably got a pretty darn good look at what happened to Vettel when he lost his tire and three-wheeled it around the track a bit.
No, that happened. That happened just before the chicane into the back straight, didn't it? So he came past us. The suspension was.
Oh, it was after the S's. After the S's. I thought it was through the S's. I'm sorry.
So because he just, you know, they got. One thing that you don't really get on TV is the amount of undulation there is at Austin. And there's some quite big sort of brows. That brow where he lost his suspension, when you walk the track, is actually quite reasonably quite steep. Certainly by Michigan standards, anyway.
Well, I mean, listen, I mean, television flattens out racetracks. In general, I mean, if you look at Eau Rouge on the TV, it looks cool, but it doesn't look as intimidating as it truly is when you see it in person. Another obvious one is you watch videos of Nordschleife and Nürburgring, and then if you ever get the chance to go to Germany and drive Nürburgring, it is a wholly different experience because of how much sharper and steeper everything is. And, the Austin Grand Prix has legit proper elevation change in hills and all that stuff.
And that was one of the things I was going to mention is because I had to buy three wristbands, not one, we decided to forego the grandstand experience, which is what I did back in 15. And so we had just general entry. And at Austin, you can get away with that because there are so many good vantage points around the track. The banking is tall enough and deep enough that you can pack a lot of people onto them and still get good viewing. It's just a great place to be, especially when it's sunny. Back in 15, it was a bit wet and cold, but this time around, it was much more pleasant, the weather. Whereas, you know...
Well, and the weather got better with every passing day. It's pretty cool on Friday. Saturday got a little better, and Sunday was, near perfect. Yeah,
exactly. But, other tracks, places like... I mean, I've done general entry at Montreal... Horror show. Don't recommend that. I've also done general entry at Silverstone. Also, bad idea. You really need a grandstand seat at Silverstone, or you have to be a real early riser and quite happy to sit in the rain all day. But
well, Montreal, I know that track's awfully flat, so it would be hard to see much, probably.
Well, in the way they've configured the grandstands, there really isn't any good general entry viewing. Just you can't get a good vista of the cars at all, so you literally see them flashing by, which isn't that interesting. I have done general entry at Spa. Puhon actually is a very good place to watch from. There's no grandstand on the outside of Puhon.
Oh, and it's got to look, see those cars go through Puhon in person. It's got to be crazy.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So that's another track you can get away with it. But no, there's a lot to be said that it's very positive about Austin, other than the $16 beer that I bought on Saturday.
Yeah, but it was the best. It was the best beer
best
you've ever had.
Beer I've ever had. It's the first.
You just put it in the sun for 20 minutes, so it met your temperature requirements. And
I do have one pet peeve, and that is, what is the deal with Formula One and their apparel shops? All you could buy was stuff for the top three teams and the top six drivers. Apart from, I think I saw two small Senna booths, and they had a couple of places selling like cast-offs from like 3-4 years ago. But I mean, there was the odd Renault or McLaren hat, but to me, a sport with this rich heritage, and to just constantly focus on the top six drivers, was pretty disappointing. I didn't see a single piece of Williams memorabilia for sale, for example. And that's criminal. Absolutely criminal. What about Lotus? What about, Prost? What about, James Hunt? All these other great teams and drivers throughout the years. Why is there nothing sort of celebrating those guys or those teams? That's sad. A missed opportunity, I think.
Yeah, no, it's hard to argue with that. And it's funny, you'll laugh at this part, but I was I was a guest of Honda at the Grand Prix myself, so I wasn't wearing any paraphernalia, but if I were to wear anything, it would have been Honda stuff, because that's what that's kind of what I would have had to wear without getting shunned out.
Well, that's not the truth. You just have a wardrobe full of Honda gear. We both know it. Hey,
incorrect. I do have more than zero things that say Honda on it, but I think I probably have. But let's do this real quick. Actually, I know I have some BMW stuff. I actually have a couple of Mercedes AMG things, and I do have BMW. Oh, I said BMW already. You know, Mercedes. Oh, and obviously, I have a lot of Ferrari stuff. The closest thing to a wardrobe would be Ferrari.
Wow! Did you buy those garments, or were they given to you?
They were purchased for me as gifts.
Okay.
Yeah, they were not gifts from Ferrari because of my job. No. Yeah.
One other thing I really enjoyed about the weekend was the two Williams wins. Did you catch either of those?
No, I could not see, but it was very cool that they had the Formula One Masters races.
They were a lot of fun. I mean, it wasn't close racing, but to see, you know, these great old F1 cars being driven.
Well, the noises they made.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was the closest I got. The way my schedule was, I basically only saw the Formula One cars on track. And, you know, obviously I would have loved to stay and seen more, but I also certainly wasn't going to turn down the offer I was given.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So, it had to be glorious because I think the era was 66 to 86.
Yeah, I think they were all V8 DFV engines, or at least V8 engines. So it's the V8 era.
Okay.
And they were all sort of, we had Williams, we had Lotus, I think we had, a Brabham or two, those sort of era cars. And they all, you know, we're talking about black player special Lotus livery. So the black and gold colored cars and you know, the Fittipaldi era, the gorgeous looking cars. And we were lucky enough to get into the support race paddock, actually, and to see a lot of those cars being worked on and without the bodywork, which was really good fun. And in fact, my kids got to sit in a couple of racing cars as well, not F1 machinery, but they got to sit in a former Le Mans winning world sports car, which was pretty cool.
Oh, very
and,
cool.
And a Formula 4 car as well that was in the paddock. So, as I said, the whole experience was really, really good. We enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. And what was your favorite food?
The food I ate after leaving the circuit that didn't cost, you know, an arm and a leg.
But did you have any Texas barbecue? Did you go the Mexican route? I mean, what kind of food did you have? Because, you know, Texas, you know, obviously it's not as authentic as Mexican, but Texas Mexican food is usually quite good.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't really have an awful lot of time, and we had kids to juggle as well. We did eat in an interesting place on the Friday night downtown, which was a pretty groovy sort of joint with some decent food. So that was probably the highlight food-wise.
Okay, but what was it? Could you give it a theme? Was it barbecue? Was it Mexican? You probably had sushi or something nuts. You went to Texas and had Thai food.
It was a standard American fare, really. So like sliders and that type of stuff. Good.
I see.
Did I mention the beer?
you most loved it. Not $16 price.
Yeah, that $6 was. The right sort of price for a pint of IPA.
Right. So to go back up a second, I have to say that, you know, from my point of view, we were actually in these turn 13 suites. And so we could see the end. We couldn't see them coming down the straight, but we could see the end of the braking zone off the back straight through 12, 13, 14, and then see them carrying on into 15. We could see that pretty clearly. And we could also turn around because we were just high up. We could see a good chunk of sector one as well. If you really paid close attention, you could see them coming down the hill through turn two, and then realistically through turn six. And I think as you were kind of explaining, what is so great about being at the track, as you can see, it's visually so much clearer the speed that they're carrying. And through Sector 1 especially, it's just mightily impressive.
Yeah, I mean, with the lack of noise these days in a modern F1 car, it's the cornering speed that really is shocking. So you've got to find a good corner sequence to catch the cars in. And I would say Sector 1, Austin's a pretty good vantage point.
Okay, aside from Lewis, who else impressed you for the Mexican and United States Grand Prix?
One other final comment. We did enjoy the track invasion. Did you do that?
No. Didn't have time to,
we entered the track at the, I guess, just past the apex at turn one, ran down the start-finish straight, fortunately, up the hill. And we actually managed to get to the podium. I mean, there was a lot of people. It was crowded. It wasn't a good view, but we were the other side of the fence for the podium celebration, which was pretty cool, actually. And we got to see some of the cars.
Yeah, and what was that like? What was that like being there live and seeing them spray the champagne live and all that?
I mean, yeah, it was very cool. I mean, you do sort of feel a little bit fenced out, and then the sheer volume of people and trying to look after kids tempers that enjoyment a little bit, I have to say, but. But no, it was cool to just be in the area, to feel the buzz and the joy, I think, that all the drivers were radiating, and to see the cars being pushed around as well after the race, being weighed and being scrutinized, was really cool.
Very, very cool. Okay, so drivers that impressed you, other than Lewis, of course.
I think, one of the battles I quite enjoyed from Austin's perspective, if we go outside the top six here, because we already talked about Albon, he had a great recovery drive in Austin, but I enjoyed the McLaren-Ricciardo battle in Austin, where Lando and Carlos both out-qualified Daniel, I believe, and then Daniel managed to nip past Lando, but the battle raged on throughout the race. And in fact, he only pipped Lando by 0.3 of a second at the checkered flag. So that was a really good race between those two teams. Nico Hülkenberg was a little bit off the pace, but yeah, that was quite entertaining. And you could see that running throughout the whole Grand Prix. And that's the thing I enjoy about being there, is you can actually catch some of the battles going on further down the field that you wouldn't ordinarily get to see on the TV feed, which is quite cool.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I thought that Bottas continues to prove his worth at the team, you know, with a podium finish and then a win, a podium finish in Mexico and then a win in Austin. And I'm impressed with him. I think Albon, you know, as we talked about the opening, he did a great job both Grands Prix, and I'm sad for Nico Hülkenberg. Really, I really feel like he never quite got his due. Maybe he didn't really try hard enough to get his due, but I think he's a better driver than being nudged out of the Renault team would suggest.
Well, not just Renault. I think he's out of Formula One. I mean, they just announced, so all of the STR Red Bull drivers are staying. Giovinazzi's been re-signed by Alfa. And he's ruled himself out of the Williams seat. So I think he's done in Formula One, which I think is a shame.
Did Haas confirm their drivers? Because that one was the one that was still being talked about.
You know what? You might be right. I'm not sure they have. I'm not sure they have, or if they have, I've forgotten it already.
Yeah.
In which case, it's not Nico Hülkenberg.
Yeah. So, it's going to, there was conversations of Nico coming to IndyCar as one of his options. And that'd be fascinating to see. One thing that was fascinating about it, though, is Nico said, if I were to do IndyCar, I'd only do the road courses. I have no interest in the ovals, which would include the Indianapolis 500.
Yeah, that's a strange. He's not the first European driver to make that declaration, but you can't do it like that, really. If you're gonna do it seriously, you got to do the whole thing.
Exactly, that's exactly right. So, maybe it's DTM for him. I don't know.
Do you think a couple of seasons ago when he basically ended Jolyon Palmer's career at Renault, he was destroying teammates, and you really felt that at some point he'd be given a break. and get into a top seat. It's just never happened, has it? And then, unfortunately, Daniel's...
Right.
I mean, Daniel hasn't blown him away this year, but he's certainly shaded him. So, and that's it. Done. Done and dusted. I mean, it's he never had a podium. I mean, the guy had more than enough talent to get on the podium, you'd think.
Well, and he had more than enough fourth-place finishes that you'd think a podium would come as well. I mean, he was awfully close several times. So, yeah no, I completely agree. One other driver I want to get a shout out to here, George Russell. You know, Lando Norris has been getting a lot of attention. You know, the McLaren has definitely shown improvements, and indeed, the McLaren is, I just want to confirm, still comfortably fourth in the championship title hunt. Yeah, I mean, with two Grand Prix to go, they have 38 point edge over fifth place Renault. That's looking pretty darn secure in a statistical sense. And but George Russell, you know, the poor Williams team scuffing along, George Russell has still put in impressive efforts, and it's hard to get a strong gauge on it. It seems to me he's really getting the most out of the car that you could ever expect from him.
Yeah, I mean, but his only reference point is poor old Kubica, isn't it? So it is hard to tell. But I think generally people have been impressed by him this season. Of course, he'll have a new teammate next year, so he has to start all over again and show his value. But I'd agree. I mean, you just got to hope that Williams is a bit more competitive, at least on the back of the midfield next season. And they can't really stand another season like this, can they? Surely.
No, they can't. There's just the ruthlessness of financial. They literally wouldn't be able to survive with much more like this. So
I did read an interesting.
But
sorry, just to finish.
No, please go ahead.
Someone rated that the three rookies that have come in, basically Norris, Albon, and Russell, and they rated Russell the best of the three, which I thought was quite a brave conclusion, to be honest with you. But the other two have done pretty good as well, and they've had some quite tough teammates. You know, you have to say that Carlos and Max are probably better indicators or more stern teammate challenges than Robert Kubica, a guy who's, you know, been out injured for several years and hasn't really, you know, shown that he has the pace that he once had in his first crack at Formula One. So that was an interesting conclusion.
Yeah. But, I mean, to be fair, I mean, he has done really well in that Williams. Not only has he beat Kubica, he soundly beat Kubica, and especially when you look at qualifying times, things like that. And when he did that Mercedes test, he was the fastest guy. So, you know, it's more than nothing that Russell is getting the accolades he's getting, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, he's a Mercedes driver, and I'm sure he'll be eyeing a seat in a Mercedes in 21. So, of the championship points of interest remaining, so the drivers' championship's quite interestingly poised. So, in third place, we've got Charles on 249, Max is on 235, and Seb is on 230. So, there's a lot to play for. Maybe Charles has a big enough lead there, but it's all to play for to try and get second or at least third in the championship. And then,
with Ferrari strategy and with two Grand Prix to go, no, I think it's very much at play.
And then you've got on the constructors' side, Racing Point and STR battling over a sixth. So there's 1 point between them. So that's quite an interesting one.
Yeah, totally agree. 100% agree. Yeah, it does unfortunately look like Haas is going to remain where they are, and I don't see Alpha overtaking Toro Rosso here.
No.
And the other fascinating thing is, I'll be quite curious to see, and this what reminded me of this is seeing Alfa Romeo racing Ferrari. Where is Ferrari going to be with engine power, since there's been that clarification about fuel rate technicalities? Where is Ferrari going to be performance-wise, and by extension, Alfa Romeo racing Ferrari going to be performance-wise with their engines?
Well, they were quite upset at at the accusation that that, what should we call it, rules clarification was the reason many people put to their lack of performance in Austin. They said it had nothing to do with that, that basically after Charles had an engine blow up in free practice, and then for their inability to get the tyres to work, that was really why they had a lack of pace, and it wasn't anything to do with the fuel flow meter clarification. So we shall see. We shall see. In someone was saying that it'd be interesting to see how the Ferraris go up the hill in Interlagos, which is obviously requires quite a lot of grunt to get up in Sector 3 in Brazil. So that'll actually clarify the situation for everyone. It is interesting how they've had their worst Grand Prix in a long time and seemingly lost their power advantage after that rules clarification. But there may be mitigating circumstances, so we'll have to wait and see.
Exactly right. But it was not a good sign that they had the trouble they had in the US, where all of a sudden Mercedes secures pole and they seem to be a little bit just behind. And, because the U.S. isn't the biggest power track, but it is certainly one of the bigger power tracks.
Yeah, I mean, a lot was made of the fact that Seb, there was very little difference between Valtteri, Seb and Max for the top three in qualifying in Austin. But the reality is, Charles was always on the back foot because of his free practice issue. And then Lewis, who had a very poor qualifying by his own admission, it came out after the weekend that he'd had a problem with his brake bias during qualifying. So he knocked off the cover from the brake bias dial, and he was actually getting a variety of different bias during that qualifying lap, which kind of put him off a little bit. So so I think...
Yeah, that would throw me off.
So the normal qualifying session would... what would have happened? I guess we'll never know. But it certainly looks like Ferrari were struggling in Austin, in one lap pace, race pace, everything. It didn't look good.
All right. I'm going to close with a couple of Ferrari questions. Who's going to win? Who's going to be ahead in the championship, Leclerc or Vettel?
Leclerc.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. And if that's the case, what is Vettel going to do? This was Leclerc's rookie season at Ferrari, and he beats Vettel? That's not good. That's not what Vettel wants, I'm certain.
I think Seb won't worry about it. It's not cost him a championship, right? It wasn't like Charles has won the world title. He'll go away. He'll have a think about it. He'll come back next year hoping that Ferrari actually have a championship-winning car and that they can, sort out some of the operational issues they've had this season. And he'll just reset and have a crack at it. I don't think it'll faze him too much. He's too experienced.
Mr. Vettel, if you are listening, I will come to Germany and I will buy you schnitzel from your favorite schnitzel place. If you want to talk it out at all, I am there for you,
Mr. Vettel. And, just so you know, I still haven't got my bottle of gin yet.
Hey, that's a fair point. That's a fair point. But. There's only more reason for me to get gin right now. But we'll talk about that more anyway. The point is that we only missed one Grand Prix this time around, and we got an episode in. Thank you so much for your flexibility with your time, and I want to thank you for listening. Please take a moment to review us on iTunes or on whatever platform you get our podcasts. Please leave comments on the episode of your choice by going to funwithcars.com. As always, I can be reached at feedback@funwithcars.com. Tweet us at fun_with_cars. And check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/FWCars. Chris, we did it. We did it. We did it again. And yes, I owe you a bottle of gin.
Stand by to find out if it ever gets paid.
Oh, it's going to get paid, and then it's going to be consumed right in front of you. I hope you have the tonic water.
All right. Secondhand gin, then, is what I get.
I'm Robin Warner. Goodbye.